And obviously the big story of the past weekend, which caught me totally by surprise, is President Trump's comments on my interview with Tucker Carlson. And I have to say, it was very surreal. I've been following President Trump for over 10 years now, I think. Maybe just over 10 years. And I've been a fan, and I've been a critic, and I've been a skeptic. I've been on the campaign, and I've been a voter. But of course, last year I was campaigning against and didn't vote. So for Trump to finally weigh in a direct way, it was a little bit surreal. And we'll get into his comments. Of course, for the past couple of weeks, there has been this huge, intense, brutal civil war inside the GOP about the interview. And I think it's basically undeniable at this point. It is a true civil war. And it's a civil war very clearly about one issue. People can say whatever they like about it. Some people are not my biggest fan. And people can say it's about clips from my show. It's about evil. It's about Hitler. It's about the Nazis. It's about whatever. People can say whatever they like. But we all know, everybody knows, on the right and the left, the young and the old, everybody knows this MAGA civil war, it's literally about one issue and one issue only. And that is U.S. support for Israel. That's it. Period. End of story. That is what has been driving this from the very beginning. And it is based on a fundamental contradiction. That once you understand what this is, it's not hard to see why this civil war, not only its nature, but why it was inevitable. The contradiction at the center of all of this is that Donald Trump ran in 2016 on a very simple message. Two words, America first. That is what he said throughout the campaign in 2015 and 2016. He said, America first. And in particular, how was that ideology expressed? In the most concrete way, America first was relevant in Trump's critique of the war in Iraq. Trump said that invading Iraq under false pretenses, the accusation that Saddam Hussein had amassed weapons of mass destruction, he said this conflict was ruinous for the United States. This was an America last war. All kinds of money and energy and attention and investment went behind this when it could have went somewhere else. It could have went into rebuilding our own country, our own infrastructure, our own institutions. Instead, it went overseas. And so this is the kind of grievance. This is the message. This is both the abstract and concrete message that actually rallied the Republican base around Donald Trump against 16 other primary candidates in the very beginning in 2015. It's because Trump, contra Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz and everybody else, he was one of the only people to say that all these foreign wars in the Middle East, as well as the trade policy, the immigration policy, all of these policies put Americans last, and they put special interests in America, but also international special interests ahead of the United States. That was the thrust of MAGA. That was the appeal. That's why people liked Trump. That's what made Trump so popular and different from every other politician. Why was the Republican base more loyal to Trump? Why did they turn out in record numbers? Why did Obama voters in the Rust Belt flip to the Republican Party? It was because of that message. And that's what got people excited. That's what got people to turn out. Well, here we are 10 years later. And what did we do over the summer? It looks like we're literally doing the Iraq war all over again. Trump is elected in the context of Israel's war in Gaza, which the United States has supported. We have furnished Israel with over $30 billion in military aid since that war broke out. We have fought the Houthis in Yemen. We have bombed the Shiites in Iraq and Syria. We gave them missiles and bombs and all kinds of weapons to fight not just Hamas, but also Iran. And we threatened to engage Iran on their behalf. Trump is elected, and immediately the first thing that happens is that Benjamin Netanyahu visits the White House, and with the pro-Israel appointees in Trump's own government, like Mike Waltz, for example, at the National Security Council, they begin to lobby the Trump administration to go to war in Iran. And not for any reason, but specifically they say, we have to go to war with Iran because they have weapons of mass destruction. And we saw that for the first 6 months of this presidency, there was an intense tug of war. And it split the administration right down the middle. Allegedly, you had Trump, Don Jr., Steve Witkoff, and J.D. Vance on one side. They wanted to engage Iran in diplomacy and make a nuclear deal. And on the other side, you had John Ratcliffe at CIA, Mike Waltz at the National Security Council. You had Carrillo at Central Command in the DOW. You had elements inside the Department of War behind Pete Hegseth that wanted this war in Iran. And for 6 months, there was scandals over signal and back and forth, and there was pretty overt political lobbying in the media. Netanyahu trying to sabotage diplomacy, Trump trying to undercut and embarrass Netanyahu. And finally, in June, when Israel started their war with Iran, they eventually compelled the United States to enter the conflict on their side and bomb Iran's nuclear complex at Fordo. This, in a nutshell, is what this whole thing is about. This is what the Civil War is about. And this is why it was inevitable, because of this contradiction. We are 10 years into the MAGA movement. And the spark that started the MAGA movement, realistically, was the frustration, the resentment, the bitterness and anger that it seemed that no matter who we voted for, no matter what we did, we could never leave the Middle East. Whether you voted for Bush or Obama, it didn't matter. We were still in Iraq. We were entering Syria. We might be getting involved against Iran. And so Trump was elected to put America first and end the WMD regime change war. And yet, after all the fighting, all the scandals, J6, all the controversy, everything we've been through, in the end, we're about to start another war of exactly the same variety? What was it all for? Was it worth it? Why did we do any of this? What was even the point of the whole Trump revolution if we find ourselves in Iraq 2.0? If we're now starting yet another war against an even bigger country for exactly the same false pretense, which is the WMD myth. Iran is 2 weeks away from the bomb. Oh, what, just like Saddam Hussein was? And so what do we have to do? We have to go in and bomb them until we have to do regime change? So contrary to what everybody else is saying, this is not about the woke right, whatever that even means. This is not about anti-Semitism. It's not about Hitler and the Nazis. It's not even about me. It's not about the things I've said on my show over the past 10 years, which you might like or not like, you might agree with, you might disagree with, you might like me or hate me. It's about this contradiction. And whatever you think about me or them, whatever you think about Tucker and Marjorie and Trump and the rest of them, this is the central question. Is the movement going to be motivated and inspired by America first, or is it going to be motivated and inspired by globalism and Israel first? Do we have sovereignty and independence? Is that what this movement is about, or is it about some vague conservatism? Low taxes, foreign wars, free trade. If you can't afford a house, go live somewhere else. If you don't like the war with Iran, you know, get lost. That's the question. And so this has been going on for the past 2 weeks, obviously. And it's very clear that they're using the same tactics they always have. Mark Levin, Randy Fine, Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, all the usual suspects. They're literally at the Republican Jewish Coalition. Ronald Lauder, the Jewish billionaire, is at the World Jewish Congress. this weekend, Rahm Emanuel, Barry Weiss are at the Federation, or excuse me, they're at the North American Jewish Federation. At each of these three meetings, the message is the same, and it's coming from the same crowd. It's coming from organized Jewry, which I don't think is anti-Semitic to say because that's what it is. The Republican Jewish Coalition, which is a coalition of pro-Israel Jewish Republicans. The World Jewish Congress, where you have many powerful private sector, public sector Jews in governments, in business, from around the world that get together and discuss what is in the best interest of the Jewish community globally. The North American Jewish Federation, it's an organization for all the different groups of Jewish people in this continent. What else would you call that? At these three separate gatherings over the past several weeks, organized Jewry, like I said, attended by people from all different walks of life, Barry Weiss, Ronald Lauder, Rahm Emanuel, Randy Fine, Mark Levin, they're all there. Jewish News Syndicate is present. The message is very clear from them. They are saying that the answer to the opposition to the war in Iran, the answer to the opposition to the war in Gaza, the answer to the skepticism about U.S. foreign aid to Israel or support for Israel, the answer to all of this, they say, is cancel culture and censorship. And that's not me saying that. That's them saying that. Ronald Lauder at World Jewish Congress said, we have to use our influence in the government to pass anti-Semitism laws. They want to make criticizing Jews in Israel illegal. Could you imagine? Could you imagine if this were applied to any other group? Like, for example, if they made it illegal to criticize black people? Or illegal to criticize Muslims or Saudi Arabia, or if they made it illegal to criticize white people or the Nazis or something. Yes, Ronald Lauder, the billionaire heir to the Estee Lauder fortune, chair of the World Jewish Congress, said in response to all this discussion, we need to make it illegal to be anti-Semitic, which according to them is to say that Jewish people are loyal to Israel. They say that's anti-Semitic. That's now illegal. Mark Levin at the Republican Jewish Coalition, he went out and said, we're going to write down everybody's name and we're going to see who associates with who. He said, and if you don't disavow Tucker, if you don't disavow Marjorie Greene, if you platform these people, we will not support you in 2026. We will come after you. Dasha Nekrasova at Red Scare, she got dropped from her talent agency for having me on her show. It seems like they're already doing it. So this is, make no mistake about it, this is the subject of the conflict. This is what the Civil War is all about. And there is something, by the way, that goes beyond Israeli policy. When you consider that this is the action and reaction, this is the revolution and counter-revolution, it's very clear that the sides in the conflict are not, strictly speaking, the Israeli government and some Americans. It goes beyond that. Is Rahm Emanuel part of the Israeli government? No. And yet he was there at the North American Jewish Federation saying that Israel is the greatest country in the world and America's number two. Is Randy Fine part of the Israeli government? No. Is Mark Levin? No. Barry Weiss, Larry Ellison, Ronald Lauder? No, none of these people are part of the Israeli government. Not all of them are neocons. Not all of them are Republicans. Not all of them even support Netanyahu. What they all have in common is they are American Jews that are principally concerned first and foremost with the interest and the well-being and the welfare of their own community, of global Jewry and their standing in the world among all the nations. And that happens to include Israel as one of their major bases of operations, let's say. That's really the divide. That's really what's happening here. You have a coalition of people inside the United States of America, right and left, that for different reasons are saying, we're giving Israel too much money. We're going to war for Israel. Our system is being influenced by money through the Adelsons, through AIPAC, through Larry Ellison. Americans are getting together and saying, this is not good for Americans. Americans of all stripes on the right and the left, Christians and Muslims, Christians and atheists, whites and non-whites, men and women, Republicans and Democrats, young people and a lot of older people, even some actually Jews, even some Jews like Dave Smith, among other well-known ones. Americans are coming together and they're saying, this is not good for America. This is not good for Americans. This doesn't benefit our country. And then on the other side, at these meetings that are held, at these conferences, organizations, at the RJC, at the World Jewish Congress, at North American Jewish Federation, these powerful American Jewish people are getting together and saying, what is best for us? What is best for the Jews? What is best for Israel? What is best for all of us? And to put it simply, that's not America first. And a lot of Jewish people like to say, for example, I've seen Brett Weinstein. Brett Weinstein says that as America first, we want to exclude Jews. I would say simply, Jews are excluding themselves. When a Jewish person says, I see myself as a Jew first, not an American, when a Jewish person goes out to an organization of Jewish people and speaks as we the Jews and not we the Americans, am I excluding them from America first, or are they excluding themselves? Are they seeing themselves out of the door? When I say we, I'm talking about we the Americans. When I say what is best for America, I'm talking about what is best for all Americans. Because I identify with America. I identify as part of that tribe. America is my tribe. Americans are my tribe. Citizens of America are the people that I see myself as having something in common with. Whereas at these conferences and organizations, that is not the case. Shapiro and Barry Weiss and Mark Levin and the rest of them, they go out there and say, we, the Jews, what is best for us as the Jews, the actions we will have to take, what must be done as the Jews for Israel, for the Jewish community in the United States, for the global Jewish community. And that's not patriotic. That's not American, actually. And by the way, they can't then be mad when other groups do the same thing. How can we expect immigrants, Muslims, blacks, whites, how can we expect any group to put America ahead of their tribe if you won't do the same? How is that reasonable? How is it reasonable to say that when every other group comes to America, you have to leave your racial, tribal, religious, cultural identity at the doorstep, but not the Jews? The Jews can be we the Jews, and we love Israel first and foremost, and America second, but then they're going to call me a white supremacist or a white nationalist? They're going to call Zohran Mamdani an Islamist in favor of Sharia law? They're going to call all the non-whites third worldists and the rest of it. How does that work? I saw Ezra Klein brought on some Jewish leftist from New York to talk about me. And they both said the same thing. They said, this identity politics is so poisonous. Really? So Ezra Klein will have on Yoram Hazoni and will have on this Jewish leftist. And they're going to talk about what is best for pro-Israel inside the right wing and anti-Semitism. And then they're going to say it's wrong when anybody else engages in identity politics, particularly white people. That doesn't work. That's not American. That's not America first, obviously. They're not America first. They are Israel first. And everybody knows that. And anyway, so this has been the civil war for the past 2 weeks. And of course, the pro-Israel side is clearly losing. everywhere you look, on Instagram, on Twitter, on YouTube, they are getting ratioed. They are not popular. They don't bring the views. They don't bring the likes. All their comments are negative. And the opposite is also true of the Israel critical side. Tucker Carlson has the biggest show in the country. Candace Owens, I think, is right there next to him. Then you have people like myself. I'm bigger than ever before, despite being censored and suppressed and canceled and radioactive. The Americans are speaking out loudly and clearly. But the pro-Israel side has a little trick up their sleeve, and this is very intentional, and I told you about this last year. They are hiding behind Donald Trump. To put it very simply, that's the only card they have to play. As they're browbeating Marjorie Greene and Candace and Tucker and me and the rest of them, the only card that they have to play, because they've tried to play every other card. They've tried to say, you're not really conservative or you're not right wing or whatever. The only card they have left to play is to literally cling to Donald Trump's leg and hide behind him in the MAGA movement. And so when the first disavowal came at the Republican Jewish Coalition, Randy Fine, this disgusting, evil human being, the congressman from Florida, he goes up to give his speech and he has a group of his followers stand in front of the stage holding up signs that say, Tucker is not MAGA. That was the angle. They're using Trump, drafting behind him, using him as a Trojan horse to deflect all criticism. They have bribed Trump. They have infiltrated Trump. Miriam Adelson gave him $100 million. These people are all over his administration. Look at J.D. Vance's chief of staff. The guy's a Tikva fellow, Jacob Riesis. He's like a proud liberal Jewish guy who eventually came over. So the Jewish people are hiding behind Trump and they're saying, well, if anybody criticizes us, then you're really criticizing Trump. And if you're criticizing Trump, then you're not MAGA. That's their move. That's why Shapiro has glommed onto Trump. That's why Mark Levin has. They were both never Trumpers. In 2016, Mark Levin and Ben Shapiro were never Trumpers. That's back when Trump was America first. But over 10 years, now that they have slowly infiltrated, and now that Trump is bombing Iran and giving Israel aid, and now that he's best buddies with Netanyahu, they meet four times this year. Now, they're inside and they're saying, anybody that's against us is not MAGA. Anybody that's against us, including Tucker, including Marjorie Greene, well, they're out of step with the spirit of the movement. And that was the last card they had to play. Everybody was already against them. Everybody already said, we're sick of the gaslighting, the lying. We're sick of Judeo-Christian kissing the wall. We're sick of the foreign aid bombing your enemies for you. We're sick of the Orwellian censorship surrounding the issue. The only card they had left, and it's a game they're playing, is to tell everybody, well, if you're not with Levin and Randy Fine and war with Iran, then you're not MAGA. And yesterday, Donald Trump took away that last card. Finally, the president was asked directly, what do you think about Tucker Carlson's interview with Nick Fuentes? And Trump gave his answer. He said, I like Tucker. He said, and that's Tucker's job, is to talk to people. You can't tell Tucker he can't interview people. He said, let people decide. Get the word out and let people make up their minds for themselves. And with that, the game is over. Because that's all you have to do. As long as people like myself and Tucker and Marjorie and all of them, as long as people like us can simply get the word out without censorship, without cancel culture, without blacklisting, without suppression, without getting murdered, as long as we are free to get the word out, to speak our minds freely, and as long as the audience is free to make up their own minds, as long as they are free to receive the information on social media, as long as they are free to make a decision as Americans in their conscience, then it's game over for the pro-Israel crowd. Because when you get rid of all these games, when you get rid of the censorship game, ban this guy from Twitter, demonetize him, ban him from PayPal, the blacklisting, the radioactivity, you can't defend Tucker and Tucker can't interview him. Vance has to fire Buckley because Tucker is Buckley's dad and Tucker talked to Nick and Nick said this 10 years ago. As long as you get rid of these games, which are really mind control games. That's all that that is. Controlling the flow of information, controlling who is approved, who is credentialed, accredited to give opinions or form people's opinions. Without all that stuff, there is no argument. And that's why none of them will debate. If there was one single legitimate argument that we should support Israel, then Ben Shapiro would have debated me a long time ago. And he would have proven to everybody why I'm wrong and he's right and why everything I've done was just me being having some sort of pathology. If they had one single argument, Mark Levin would debate Tucker Carlson at America Fest. Tucker is the biggest show in America. Mark Levin, I think, is the biggest show for people over the age of 85. But that's just it. The reason that we have supported Israel and fought these wars and given them all this money, the reason that nobody investigates this conspicuous amount of influence from this one ethnic group, it's not because there isn't legitimate information. It's not because it's false. It's because it is true. And they have used their power through institutions like the ADL, like AIPAC, like the World Jewish Congress, like all these different groups that make up a constellation, which we would call organized Jewry. They have used this influence to shut down the conversation. Anybody that starts that conversation is isolated and destroyed to create a chilling effect. Across the board, they prevent anybody who says these things from having a platform. And if they have a platform, from making money because they take away your bank account. Or if you make money, from talking to anybody legitimate by going after those that associate with the people that open up that conversation. And the moment that somebody says, and in particular, President Trump says, let the Americans decide, then the whole thing is over. And this is a story. This is from the Washington Post. We'll read through the comments in particular. It says, quote, President Donald Trump defended Tucker Carlson on Sunday for interviewing white nationalist Nick Fuentes nearly 3 weeks after the former Fox News host triggered backlash within the conservative movement for giving the far-right activist a platform. Speaking to reporters on Sunday night, Trump seemed to shrug off questions about whether Carlson should have invited Fuentes on the podcast. He said, quote, we've had some great interviews with Tucker Carlson, but you can't tell him who to interview. I mean, if he wants to interview Nick Fuentes, I don't know much about him, but if he wants to do it, get the word out. Let him. You know, people have to decide. Ultimately, people have to decide. Meeting people, talking to people, like for somebody like Tucker, that's what they do. People are controversial. Some are, some aren't. MAGA has spoken. And unfortunately for Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro, Randy Fine, you have lost. You lose. And we win. Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro, Randy Fine, Laura Loomer, you are not MAGA. You are not American. You are not America first. And as long as you don't identify first and foremost, as long as your only allegiance is not to the United States, then you will never, ever be American. You will never be able to call yourself America first. You thought you could hide behind Trump with your tricks, your bribery, your money, your influence peddling games. You thought you could hide behind Trump. You thought that anybody attacking you, all of this would be deflected because you're right there at the Ohel in Brooklyn. You're there throwing your little piece of paper on the Rebbe's grave. You lose. And you lose because Trump, maybe on some fundamental level, in this last moment has chosen his own base of supporters over you people. And I don't know what he'll say about it tomorrow, and I don't know what he'll say about it next week. And who knows? Maybe he'll flip-flop. He has a tendency to do these things. But all he had to say to break the spell was as simple as this: people have a right to decide. That's really what it comes down to. On some level, it is a question of whether the American people still have the right, still have, better said, the sovereignty to make decisions for our own country. Does America have the right to make a decision not to support Israel? Is that an outcome that is even possible? Is that an outcome that will be tolerated or permitted? Can Americans make the decision not to support Israel, or is that unacceptable? Have our Jewish oligarchs like Larry Ellison and Miriam Adelson and the rest of them, have our Jewish oligarchs at the World Jewish Congress and at the Republican Jewish Coalition, have they decided that no, America cannot stop supporting Israel? Americans cannot make that decision. That's why they have to be manipulated. That's why they have to be lied to. That's why they can't listen to certain opinions without pushback, without somebody arguing or interrupting them all the time. That's the fundamental question. Do Americans have the right to speak to each other about our support for this country? Do we have the right to make the decision to stop? And MAGA has spoken. The answer is yes, we do. And with that, Trump has effectively said, let the best man win. Trump has effectively recused himself and he's abandoned the pro-Israel lobby. He is saying, you have to fight it out amongst yourselves. Get the word out and let people decide. If the people like Tucker and the people like Nick, he says, then so be it. And if they don't, then I'll go the other way. Trump, in typical Trump fashion, has recused himself and he now wants us to fight it out. So I think the MAGA civil war will go on. They will continue to try to fight Tucker and Marjorie Greene. They will continue to try to cancel me. And we will continue to get the truth out. We will continue to spread the message. But the piece that has been taken off of the board, the card that has been removed, is the Trump card. The pro-Israel lobby now has to win the argument. They have to now win the battle without any kind of support from the president, without being able to draft behind him and his brand. And I think that without that, they really have nothing, and it's only a matter of time. Just wait for 2026 and 2028. And now here is the kicker. Here's the punchline for all of it. So Trump has declined to disassociate from Tucker, and it only makes sense. Why is that? It's because Tucker is more popular than Trump. Tucker's favorability among Republicans is 62%. So Tucker is massively popular inside the right wing. Trump doesn't want to alienate him. And if Tucker saw it fit to have me on the show, and if it was a popular show, I'm sure Trump doesn't want to alienate Tucker. But now this has put every other Republican politician in a similar situation, which is they will have to make a decision whether to disavow Tucker and to stand firmly with the pro-Israel lobby, or if they want to maybe move closer to Tucker Carlson to earn the support from his base. This is where real politics begins. And this is the message for 2026. This is so important. We have to take a look, just like the Israel lobby is. And in 2026, we need to be keeping a list of names. And by we, I mean America first. Any politician that has disavowed Tucker Carlson, we have to get the word out. Don't vote for them. Vote for their primary candidate or their primary opponent. And if they win their primary, don't vote for them in the general. That has to be the message. This is the only way to hold their feet to the fire. This is the only way to make it work. This is what I said in 2021, in 22, in 24. We have to use our vote in the affirmative and in the negative. We need to create the list. If you're with Tucker, you have our vote. If you disavow Tucker, you don't. If you cannot take a stand for America first, then you have no business being an elected official in the American government. That is the message. In 2026, in the midterms, we are showing up and the Groypers are showing up with us. If you disavow Tucker, you will not get the votes. If you disavow the Israel lobby like Thomas Massie, we will show up for you. And by we, I don't just mean the Groypers. I mean everybody that is America first. Ian Carroll and Anna Kasparian and Tucker and all of them. If you're America first, we will help you. If you are America last, we will punish you. And the GOP has a decision to make. If they are willing to go America first, then maybe they can keep their majority. Or they can hold off the worst losses in the face of the Democrats. But if the Republican Party doubles down on America last, then they will be finished in America. And we have to be willing to let them go extinct. Have to be willing to play hardball. We can no longer make the compromise that we will let you put America last in order to defeat the Democrats. No, America first is a precondition. And we will single you out. If you're America last, we will make you lose. If you're America first, we will help you win. And we are outcome independent. If Republicans keep the House, then God bless. If they lose it, so be it. We're not going to tolerate an America last GOP anymore. 2016 was about this. In some way, this entire fight for the past 10 years has been about this. We are not going to allow the GOP to slide back into serving the global special interests, the Israel lobby, international banks, Wall Street, and Silicon Valley. That's the call to action. So Trump said, let them fight. I say, bring it on now. What do you got now, Mark Levin, Ben Shapiro? You just got the rug pulled out from under you. There goes your sugar daddy, Shapiro and Mark Levin. You have nobody else to hide behind. No more tricks, no more cancellation, no more censorship. It's just you and me, pal. You and me, Shapiro and me, Levin and me, and Tucker and the others. And now I think they're going to be a lot less confident. Mark Levin says, who's platforming Marjorie Taylor Greene? What, are you going to cancel all of them? Good luck. Mark Levin says, we're taking names. We're going to make our decisions in 26. So are we, fat boy. So are we, fat man. We are doing the same exact thing. Let's see who they listen to. Let's see who the politicians really listen to. Will they listen to the voters when we have activists showing up in their district? Will they listen to the Joe Kent effect, or will they listen to you? That's the fight. That's the battle. So we're gearing up for 2026. You want to get involved? Get ready. You want to get involved? This is going to be a nationwide campaign. We are taking names. And if you are disavowing Tucker, you're getting people in your district. They're coming to your events. They're coming to your district. We are going to hurt you politically in your reelection campaign. It has to be this way. And we're calling on everybody to do it from coast to coast. Wherever you are, this is going to be the mission. So people say, how can I get involved? How can we support America first? This is politics. People say, we're not going to vote our way out of it. You're right. We have to make them feel our presence. Politically speaking, we have to be very careful. It's a very chaotic timeline, but 2026, I'll see you there. Ben Shapiro, you bring your people. Let's see how that goes. Shapiro, Levin, hey, Mark Levin, why don't you put out the call on, what are you at, talk radio? Let's see how many of the nursing home members from the villages you can get to turn out nationwide, and let's see how many people I can get to turn out. Mark Levin and Shapiro huddling in their fortress in Surfside or whatever in South Florida. Let's see how many people you can bring out to the districts. Let's see how many people I can bring out there. And we'll see where the GOP's loyalty lies. That's the question. So that's that. But we're going to move on. We're going to get into the Epstein files, and then we're going to wrap it up. We'll do super chats. So, and look, I saw some people saying this. They said, you know, you said MAGA is dead. Then you said, thank you, Mr. President. I have to say, this is the best day in Trump's second term yet, I think. Trump taking a stand on this issue may be the most important thing he has done so far this year. He bombed Iran. He tried to cover up the Epstein files. He gave Israel $12 billion in aid. He has not deported nearly enough people. He did not schedule F 50,000 federal employees. But if all that he did is deflate the Israel lobby, if all that he did is decline to cancel Tucker Carlson, that might just be enough to create an opening. So I've said it before, I'm not a Trump hater. When Trump does something bad, I criticize. When Trump does something good, I praise. And this is maybe the best thing Trump has done all year. So if he keeps it up, man, this is the kind of Trump that we wanted to see from the beginning. Where was this Trump the whole year? Trump says, fine, release the Epstein files. Oh, let Tucker talk to whoever he wants. Where was this Trump from the beginning? I wish we had this Trump when Bibi bombed Iran. So I like to see it. Very solid move, Mr. President. I knew you had it in you. I always knew deep down you still had it in you. We love this guy, but he's just been disappointing us. Please, let us support you again, but you have to do the right thing. So I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. President. I knew you had it in you the whole time.